Welcome to the Why Not You podcast, where our goal is to inspire, teach, and elevate your personal journey. Our heart-centered guests love sharing some of their life-changing aha moments, hoping that it might be of benefit to you. Welcome to the Why Not You podcast, and boy, do we have a treat for you today. I have my very dear friend, Rick Peterson, on the line with us today, and I've got sticky notes and notes everywhere around here because there's so many things that we can talk about and discuss. It's just a treat to have you here with us today. Rick, thank you.
Thanks, Clay. It's an honor to join you. Thank you.
Well, Rick, before we get really going here, I'd like you to tell the audience a little bit about where you're from and where you grew up, what it was like at the Peterson household growing up as a kid.
Okay. Well, I grew up in a little town in rural Utah. I was number six of eight kids, so I had a big family. And being at the tail end of that, I was always the one trying to follow and tag along with my older siblings. And that combined with just a natural sense of curiosity. Yeah, I started at a young age just trying to figure things out and probably act older than I was and learn about things. So in addition to that environment of coming from a large family in a small town, I grew up poor. You know, we didn't have a lot of money, and yet we lived next to an affluent area. So most of my friends were a little more affluent and had more things than we did. But other than that, little always feeling a little inferior because of that, I think I had a pretty ideal childhood growing up in a small town with really good parents.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, no, I can relate to that. I was eight of eight, and I was never quite good enough, fast enough, big enough, or my siblings didn't really want me hanging around with them either, and they're friends, so I get that. But I had great parents and a great growing up. But you've really been an entrepreneur. I mean, I've known you for, gosh, what is it, 25, 30 years or so, and we've done a lot of really cool things together and whatnot, so I know you're an entrepreneur at heart. And I'd like for you to talk a little bit about how you got started to be an entrepreneur. Were there some mentors or whatnot along the way that got you going?
Yeah, for sure. But I think the drive, the desire to, you know, create my own business or my own opportunity started, as I said, back in those early days of being poor and wanting what my friends had. And so as soon as I could, you know, all my older siblings were paper boys. And I think my mom wouldn't let them start till they were 10 or 12. And I started when I was eight, you know, just drove her crazy. I think she let me get a route just to shut me up. And I loved that. And then I asked for two routes and three routes and figured out how if I gave all my buddies popsicles, they'd help me roll the papers and get them ready to deliver. And so at a young age, I started to see that I could make my own way and create my own opportunities. And that just kind of stayed with me. I always had jobs, always asking the neighbors if I could mow their lawns or do work. And as I got out of high school and got into college, I had an opportunity to start a real estate sign business. And so I dropped out of college my first year, created a business where we lease signs to real estate companies. And after building that up for a couple of years, a much bigger company from the big city came down and bought me out. And I think that gave me a taste of what that can be like. If you build something and create value, there's the exit opportunities are pretty awesome to get a big check as a young kid. And that started early. And then, as you know, I got involved in an opportunity to build a distribution business that I spent 14 years developing. That's where you and I had an opportunity to work together. Yes. And my goal getting involved in that was always to take it to Mexico. I knew the language. I loved the culture. And so I moved to Austin, Texas and started to launch it there. So as the company was ready to take those products into Mexico, I could be at the forefront of that. And as a result, ended up with the majority of the market share in Mexico and had a lot of fun doing that. And that led to South America and Eastern Asia and Europe and, you know, a dozen other countries over 14 years. And that was a really great experience. And that's where I developed a lot of the mentors in my life, including Glade Polson.
Oh, well, I don't know about that.
Yeah. He's much older and wiser than I am. And no, Glade, you've had a huge impact on my life over the years, and I think you know that. But I'm grateful for mentors, and I encourage people to not try to figure everything out for themselves, but to find those mentors. But after doing that for 14 years, as you know, I had an opportunity to be part of a global startup with a nanotech company, and that gave me a whole different experience and exposure. And I was able to take the things I'd learned in my first experience and develop those there. And then eventually that led to me just consulting with young startup companies. And then over the last several years, transitioning into the coaching side of that, dealing with the people side more than the business side.
Gotcha. Well, before you kind of, you know, went into the South America, Mexico thing, you had to somewhere along the line kind of get a taste of personal growth and development, those types of things. I know you're a big proponent of personal growth and development. So where did that come into the picture?
Again, started really young because I knew I was a little bit of a disadvantage. You know, my family didn't have resources. I didn't have a formal education, advanced education because of, you know, dropping out of college. And so I knew it was really up to me to develop myself and to learn and to grow. And you know, I bought one of the very first Tony Robbins 30-day programs on his very first ever infomercial. So, okay. You know, that was 30 years ago or whatever. And that commitment to follow a program and to learn from somebody else really resonated with me. And even when I was broke and I had very little money, I would always invest in opportunities to grow myself. I just felt like that was the way to get more money, more resources. And then, yeah, you're right. As I started to develop that business and grow into Mexico, I saw an opportunity to teach and train all I'd been learning all those years to my team members. And so you worked with me a lot in developing some training and personal development programs and ended up getting a chance to teach those all over the country, or well, all over the world eventually.
Yeah, I'll never forget a time when we were sitting in, I think it was Seoul, Korea. We were sitting at some fancy hotel there and some people came in, and I had been doing a little bit more in that area, that region of the world, and I didn't know the language. You were comfortable with the language in South America and Spanish and whatnot because you were fluent in that. But here you were in another country sitting there not understanding a word that was going on. But you read the people. You saw exactly what was going on. And that experience really helped you later on in life when you did that startup. Like when you walked into Nokia and Ericsson and all these different telephone companies selling the waterproof technology years ago. I mean, that you were literally at the leading edge of that technology. And it came from those experiences that we shared together and the personal growth that you had developed.
You're right. And I remember that very clearly. In fact, I think after that meeting, we went to out into the street and I remember buying my first fake Rolex in Korea. No, you're right. I was scared, you know, but I found that my natural curiosity and just love for people trumped my fear in going into those new situations. And I think that's important, that even when we're in an uncomfortable situation, a new situation, we should look for those opportunities to just get to know the people. And if you get to know the people and they know you're sincere and genuine, even if you can't speak their language, the rest of the stuff took care of itself.
Really did. And Rick, did you ever take any kind of assessments or anything like that to kind of know who you were and understand your personality a little bit? I think I've taken about everyone there is out there, but I wondered if you did that same thing.
I did. And fortunately, that happened really early in my career. Took a personality assessment. I don't remember which one was the first one, but I do remember the results kind of blowing my mind at how accurate it was, but also how it was like stepping outside of yourself for a minute and seeing who you are and what makes you tick and how you interact with other people. And so I ended up using some kind of a personality assessment or profile in building my teams forever. You know, one of our old mentors, Bob Crescetto, had that saying he always said, make your strengths productive and your weaknesses irrelevant. And that's what those assessments help me do, is identify mine and my team members' strengths and weaknesses and then pair us up. So my strength was being focused on, my weaknesses were focused on by someone who that was their strength. And it taught me a lot in how to interact and work with people. And now in my coaching process, I use actually a temperament assessment, which is kind of different. I've learned that there's temperament and there's personality. And most of the assessments I've taken are personality. The difference is nature versus nurture. Nature is what we're born with, and I now know that's our temperament. Personality is nature. That's what we develop through our life. And so even understanding that today and what we're born with and how we naturally interact has been super helpful in everything I've done.
Well, it sounds like you're still learning, you're still growing, you're still taking those assessments, and that's life, right? We can't stop. We can't rest on our laurels, and it's time to just move forward and go forward with faith.
Yeah, you do have to be willing to continually learn. You know, even as we're getting older, things are changing. Technology and how we interact, the fact we're on videos and Zooms, and rather than being face-to-face as much, you know, we've got to learn to adapt and change.
Well, Rick, I know you had a life-changing experience at this time. I mean, when we were working together, there was, you know, you had a really good business going on. You had significant market share in South America. You were expanding internationally. And then something happened. Something significant happened. Do you mind sharing with us a little bit about that episode?
Not at all. I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I think you do.
I know what you're talking about because it was life-changing. And you're right, Blaine. In a lot of ways, I was at the top of my game, right? I had a global business. We lived in a huge, beautiful home. I had three beautiful children. But I realized through this experience that I had been focusing primarily on my own success and recognition in business, and maybe not as much as I should on some of the more important things. And so this experience helped me. It, just real quickly, you know, myself and my partner were extreme snowmobilers. We would get the latest version of the most aggressive snowmobile each year and try to get into the backcountry and, you know, snowmobile where most people didn't. And as a result, we ended up getting two new sleds. It was early in the season, and we headed up to just try them out real quick because my partner was taking a youth group out the next day and going to use them. And I just bring that up because we had a four-place trailer, and two of the spots were our sleds from the previous year, loaded with all of our survival equipment and GPS and everything you would need in a difficult situation. And we didn't take time that day to transfer that to our new snowmobiles. And long story short, we took off and got into the backcountry. The snowmobiles really performed, so we got deeper in than we'd ever been and ended up driving off what we now know was a frozen waterfall and broke through the ice in the pond at the bottom. So our sleds were submerged. We were wet up to our waist, and we were in the deep, deep wilderness. So that resulted in a three-day survival experience, two, you know, freezing nights and 3 days of trying to crawl through deep powder snow to get ourselves to a situation where we could get rescued.
Yes, they actually made a documentary on this. Which documentary station or what was that? Was Great Outdoors or something like that?
Yeah, it was Warren Miller Films, who everybody knows, and they had a series called Wild Survival. And it was awkward because we had to go back up and reenact some of that. It felt so corny. I didn't like that. But if it helped other people realize some of the things you can do when you're in a survival situation like that, it was well worth doing. But yeah, I obviously survived. But
I know that it was a very near death experience for you and your partner there.
Yeah, I mean, the first night we thought this is kind of when we realized we were going to have to spend the night, we thought, wow, this is going to be a great story to tell Glade when we get home. But it was a terrible night. It was freezing cold. We had hypothermia. You know, you couldn't control your body shivering. It was just horrible. And we couldn't get in shelter because the snow was so deep and it was powdery. So you couldn't build a snow cave. And so we survived that first night and then started crawling again the second day. And we crawled that entire day And at the end of that day, we realized, oh my gosh, we're going to go a second night. And that scared us because the snowmobilers we follow when people get lost, and we realized nobody we'd ever heard of had survived a second night at that altitude and those temperatures. So we knew that was pretty precarious, and that was scary as heck. And so we did find a way to cuddle up under a tree that had fallen over and got closer to my partner than I ever thought I would. But we tried to keep each other warm and alive, and we tried to stay awake because we'd heard about, you know, if you fall asleep and get comfortable, you don't usually wake up. So we survived that night, didn't sleep. I didn't sleep either night. And so by that third day, we were exhausted and spent, but we knew we had to try to crawl and get to some opening or somewhere where aircraft could see us. And unfortunately, midday, early afternoon, we were done. We were, your body's shutting down, your organs aren't working, you know you're dying, and we just couldn't move. And then it started to snow. And we knew if it snowed, it would ground the aircraft, which was our only hope. Right. And so at that point, we decided to huddle together and pray. I know everybody has different beliefs, but we felt there was definitely something bigger than us that could help. And it was one of the most spiritual experiences, life-changing experiences of my life, Glade, because it was in that moment I was doing the praying, and, you know, I was praying for our families and that we would, you know, at least be able to be found so they would have closure, be able to recover our bodies, and then just said, we turn it over to you, you know. And that was really scary because I knew as soon as those words came out of my mouth that I was not only saying, please step in and rescue us or help us be found, but I was more likely, because of the situation, saying, go ahead and take us. Not like God needs permission to do that.
But right. But
I was letting go, and it scared the crud out of me for a minute. And then I just got a super peaceful feeling, and we decided to just wait it out. And I tried to crawl just a few feet out into a little teeny clearing and collapsed. And we were barely conscious. We knew we were done. And the uniqueness of the experience, I think, for me, Glade, is that unlike a near-death experience that lasts, you know, where you just have a flash, your life flashes for you, and it's just right. Short, for probably a good 8 hours, I knew I was dying. I knew I was going to die. I knew that was it. And so you start to think about, going back to my saying that I felt like I was at the top of my game. Yeah, I had all that success in material ways, but I hadn't been taking care of my family that well. As far as, I hadn't been home a lot. I was traveling internationally. And more importantly, just little things. Like that night, my oldest son, who was 8 at the time, had done something and I'd got upset with him. And that happens with kids, obviously. But I had always gone in and tucked him in at night and made amends. And we always settled things. He was my best little buddy. And for some reason, that night, I didn't do that. And so that was so heavy on my mind that that was the last interaction I had with that kid, and I couldn't go change it. I didn't kiss my wife goodbye and tell her goodbye that morning. I always did that. And here again, I couldn't change it. I had to live with what I'd done that last day of my life. And that was profoundly, excruciatingly painful. But as you know, the story goes, shortly after that, the snow stopped, the skies cleared. 2 helicopter pilots and a sheriff's helicopter were in an airport 60 miles south of us, and they said their own little prayer. And even though they had about 1,000 square miles to search, they lifted up and flew straight to where we were. And as I'm laying there barely conscious, I hear the thump, thump, thump of a helicopter. I look up and see that sheriff's logo on the bottom of that helicopter. And he tilted the helicopter 2 or 3 times to let me know that he saw us. And you can imagine the relief. Now, that was just the beginning of a 5 or 6 hour harrowing rescue experience where a couple of search and rescue people were dropped in and helped us get to a very precarious landing zone where we got onto the helicopter and we eventually flown through life flight to the University of Utah Hospital, where fortunately they have a burn unit, which turns out to be a really good place to do a controlled thaw on frozen people. And as a result, we both have all of our limbs and are, you know, pretty healthy and ended well. But what a life-changing experience to have to really evaluate what you had done up to that point, and if you could own that, if it was your last day.
Wow. I mean, I've heard this story several times. I've watched the documentary and I still get just spellbound just listening to it. And I just can't imagine the thoughts and the feelings that are going through your mind at that time. And yeah, it's harrowing just to think about it, let alone live through it. So thanks for sharing that with us and our audience. And so, you know, after that happened, Rick, everything's just turned out hunky-dory since then. Right?
Yeah, right.
There's been no challenges whatsoever.
Yeah. Well, it was almost 20 years ago, so a lot's happened and life happens. We all have our stuff. And, you know, I've had, believe it or not, much harder things to deal with since then. You know, I was on the phone with my best friend when he committed suicide. I had my father and brother in a plane accident, and my brother died in my arms when I got there. I ended up dealing with depression for several years. I had a son who didn't want to live and had to go through trying to help him find his way and connect. So yeah, that happens, and everybody has their stuff, and I know that I'm not unique in that sense. But that snowmobile experience did help me understand a couple of important things as I dealt with future challenges. One of them was I realized that I can do a lot more than I think I can. We all can. I thought I was done at the end of the first day of that experience, and I survived two more days so I could be in a position to be rescued. But more importantly than my ability to do more than I ever thought I would is I became a firm believer that I'm better when I ask for and I'm open to help from the people around me, as well as, you know, the sources that are bigger than any of us. And every time I've dealt with these other challenges, that's come into play and helped me realize that there's help available. We need to ask for it. We need to seek it. And then we need to do the best we can to work through it and do our part.
Well said. So true. I too have gone through some, not nearly the challenges that you have, but I've got to that same place where it's just like, I can't do it by myself. And as a young boy on, you know, my mom passed away when I was, you know, 6 years old, and we were out on a farm. And there was no one close by. And I was the curious one, you know, asking all the questions. And everyone was reeling. Everyone was hurting from the experience of our mom passing away, including my dad, of course. I mean, stuck there with 8 kids to raise and all by himself. And anyway, it was just, I went inside my own mind. I went inside my own head, trying to figure out everything. And that's where I was for so many years. In fact, I still battle it to this day, looking for and asking for help. So yeah, I get it.
Well, and I hope your listeners are hearing that, because I think we all have a tendency to do that, to try to fix things, to try to solve things ourselves. And that's not a bad trait in a lot of ways, right? It can help us be dedicated and committed and focused, but it's a lonely path and it's a less effective path. With my coaching clients today, I really encourage them to know yourself, get to know yourself, get to know those things about you, get to know what you are capable of, but also the traits that keep you from getting the help you need. And being personally accountable is a great trait, and we should always strive for that. But also welcoming and looking for help, especially today. There's so many new challenges that we're dealing with. The young people that are growing up in this generation with social media and different things. We need to not just recognize our own need for help, but be looking for opportunities to help those around us who need it.
Well, Rick, I know you're doing a lot of coaching and whatnot right now. And can you tell us just a, you know, 30,000 foot view of the coaching that you're doing and talk a little bit about the 3 C's?
Yeah, my coaching model is built around the 3 C's, which are core, connection, and create. And core is just getting to know who you are at the core. I do have a temperament assessment that I use for that, but everybody can just focus on who they really are and what drives them. What's your personal passion? What's your love? And in that process, I really encourage people to focus on what they do have more than what they don't have. And gratitude is a powerful tool, right? If we can focus on the good stuff and be grateful, it really prepares us to not just serve ourselves, but to serve others. And don't take a single day for granted, obviously. That's a lesson that I learned the hard way. And if you can be in the habit of trying to live every day as if it's your last and be grateful for who you are, it sets you up to go to the second C, which is connection. And I'm a big believer in the power of connection. I believe that it's innate in all of us, our desire to connect. We were born with it, and we want and need to connect with others, whether it's in our personal relationships or in the workplace. It's powerful. But in order to connect, we've got to know who we are. And then we can connect with others. And I believe once you get in that position where you know yourself, you're connecting with those around you, you're in a special place to create. Create whatever it is that, you know, find your passion, find what drives you, and create that in your life.
Well, that's awesome. That's some great stuff there, Rick. And I'll put in the show notes how people can get in touch with you if you'd like me to, and, you know, be able to help other people. Because I know your story. I mean, we've only spent, you know, 30 minutes here talking a little bit, and you've got a lifetime of experience and wisdom and whatnot. So thank you for sharing that. And if we could just kind of end with one last little tidbit. I know you've shared a whole bunch with us already, but if there was one little thing that you could share with the audience today, what would that be to just, you know, how could they improve the quality of their life?
Well, yeah, maybe it is just a reminder of what we talked about. Is invest in knowing and understanding who you are. You know, get to know yourself, the good, the bad, the ugly. We all got it, but own it, understand it, and try to let go of any shame or guilt that's attached to that, and just love yourself for who you are. And then don't settle for less than an individual, a human being with your gifts and skill set deserves in this life. You deserve to be happy. You deserve to be fulfilled. And so I encourage everybody to find your purpose. Find what lights you up. Find what excites you. And then if you can, find a way to use that to serve others. Because I really believe fulfillment, at least for me, has come from being grateful, very grateful for all that I have. And then finding ways to serve those around me and focus on them.
Wow, that's great, Rick. Thank you so much for joining us today. And I know that our listeners have gained a lot of pearls of wisdom and from your experiences and whatnot. And I just appreciate you so much. You're a great friend and love and appreciate all that you're doing. And thanks for making this world a better place.
We're right back at you, Glade. Thanks for doing what you're doing. I think this podcast and all the efforts that you put into serving others and sharing your wealth of information has been a blessing in my life, and I'm sure it will be for others. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Thanks. See you soon.
We'd like to thank our guests for sharing a part of their experience with us on this episode of Why Not You? Also, we'd like to thank Mix at Six Studios for producing, editing, mixing, and creating our great music for this podcast. But most importantly, we'd like to thank you for listening. Be sure to leave a review on your favorite podcast platform. Also, be sure to subscribe so you don't miss our next episode of Why Not You? See you next time.